Thank you, Farah. Last year at the meetings, Farah and Ruth and I were talking about nutrient co-limitation and the idea that could you have multiple nutrient deficiencies at the same time. And so somehow or another out of that came this symposium. And so I want to be sure and acknowledge both Farah and Ruth for their contributions to the discussions and to the symposium. And I remember Ruth at one point saying, well, wait a minute, what do we mean by co-limitation? And that ever since then, I have been trying to figure out what does a co-limiting nutrient look like, or what would a multi-nutrient limitation look like. Liebig's law of the minimum has sort of been the law of the land when it comes to nutrient deficiency and sufficiency. It's a nice model. It's easy to understand that if one nutrient is limiting or one factor is limiting, as shown by the shortest stave there, that's if you can relieve that, then your growth will increase. And so, as Steve Perikis pointed out in his talk, Liebig didn't actually develop this. The law of the minimum, it was Carl Sprengel in 1828. But apparently they got along okay, so they didn't hate each other Carl didn't hate Justus for stealing his ideas. And again, the idea is that yield's proportional to the amount of the most limiting nutrient, and when that nutrient's supplied, then yields can be improved. And this is probably the most famous example in our world, in the forestry world, of a nutrient limitation, a nutrient deficiency, which can be resolved very easily. And of course, this is phosphorus deficient slash pine in North Florida. I thank Tom Fox for providing me with the slide. And this was the pines were being planted on old field sites, and one of them, part of the field site happened to include a phosphorus trial. So from that we learned that there are limiting nutrients, and if you can take care of one of them, then you can get the growth yields that we need. So how do we know when we have a deficiency? Well, when we add a nutrient back and either those symptoms of deficiency go away or that we get a growth response. And some other limitations of some pretty stark nutrient limitations. Earl Stone did some work with potassium limitations in deep sands in New York. Copper deficiencies on organic soils with pines. And boron in some situations in New Zealand soils. Those are just a few examples. So the way it works is some nutrient is limiting plant growth, and I think, Dan, this is one of those Hawaii palm trees that we will see when the North American Forest Soils Conference comes to your area. But
Or Quebec City,
yeah. That's right. You can find palm trees anywhere. Anyway, so the phosphorus is limiting. You add phosphorus to the point it's no longer limiting. Then potassium is your limiting nutrient. Add the potassium, and then magnesium and or sulfur become your limiting nutrient. You take care of all of them, you don't have a deficiency or a nutrient limitation. The lower left-hand corner here might be an example of a co-limitation because both magnesium and sulfur appear to be limiting at the same level. Earl Stone, and I'm looking at, for examples, I purposely went long or deep to find some classic examples. So some of these are older references, and yes, I know there are newer, more current ones, but I wanted to some people jog your memory and to some of our younger members to point out that we've been thinking about some of these things for a while. So in this paper published in SSSAJ Journal, or whatever it was called back in 1953, Earl Stone looked at magnesium deficiency in pine on deep sands in New York. And he hypothesized, and as shown on this graph, that the magnesium deficiency was worse where a potassium deficiency already existed. So this might be an example of a multiple nutrient limitation rather than a co-limitation, perhaps. Back in the 70s, I guess it was, Ingolstadt did some work trying to establish optimum foliar nutrient regimes using solution culture experiments. And the idea was, if we knew how much of each nutrient a plant required, then we could fertilize to get up to that level. And this was done, again, with solution culture with a variety of species as shown here. And he looked at the proportions. And for the trees that he looked at, this is the optimum proportion of nitrogen, phosphorus, calcium, potassium, calcium, and magnesium. So one of the things that I did, and this is the very first paper I ever published as a forest soil scientist, was look at the proportions of foliage in non-fertilized loblolly pine across the region-wide trials of the fertilizer co-op. And not surprising, our mean proportions were different than those of Ingolstadt's. But we were able to, because we had good growth data as well as the foliar data, detect fertilizer responses, so changes in the phosphorus to nitrogen ratio and other ratios in response to phosphorus or N plus P fertilization. We also were able to come up with some critical ranges for response to nitrogen and nitrogen plus phosphorus. So this is one way where we can look at multiple limitations, perhaps. We can look at multiple nutrient limitations in tree species. This was really, when I was looking at this, I was thinking, this is really rather a cheeky thing to have done, and I hope I was properly respectful, but I'm, anyway, back then I was young and foolish, and anyway, full of stuff. So all of this work that I've been talking about has been done in plantations, and generally conifer plantations, or pure species, certainly. So what would co-limitation look like in mixed species forest? And I had some discussions earlier today. I think we're limiting ourselves in some ways to repeating some of our past work because we have this experimental design paradigm. It's just so much easier to work in plantations with single species. But these are where some of these real questions are in these natural or at the very least mixed species forests. So what nutrients are we talking about? This is a graph that I use to explain acid deposition and base cation leaching. And so most of the nutrients that we see coming out of here on the right as a result of acid rain, the nitrate, sulfate, calcium, magnesium, potassium, those are the nutrients that we're probably interested in. We know we're very interested in calcium and magnesium deficiencies. We heard Scott Bailey talk about that earlier this week, and he did an excellent job. He also mentioned manganese, which is nowhere on this graph, unfortunately. Phosphorus is another obvious one, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. So one of our long-term studies, we've been fertilizing. We've been adding ammonium sulfate fertilizer since 1989, and we're trying to acidify the soil, create a base cation deficiency. We're trying to see what happens to a forest, a mixed species hardwood forest in West Virginia, when you do that. So Stephen Gress and Bill Peterjohn at West Virginia University have done some work with root ingrowth cores in these fertilized microsites, and we see some evidence from these root ingrowth cores and then also from these foliar data. This is the root stimulation that phosphorus might be limiting. The calcium is not a very strong signal, and nitrogen appears not to be limiting, looking at these. And looking at the ratios, we're seeing some differences between the treated and the reference watershed, which again tells us that we might have a deficiency or a limitation of phosphorus. We don't see any growth response, growth differences, and we don't really see any deficiency symptoms, foliar deficiency symptoms. But we've some of our collaborators, Dave DeWally and Brian Williard, have been looking at bolewood. And so these data are nutrient ratios in the bolewood, or in wood of trees. And so the top graph shows calcium to manganese molar ratio. Calcium and magnesium concentrations increased as a result of the fertilizer, manganese concentrations increased. And there was a short-lived growth response. And this is in black cherry, Prunus serotina, which is a very valuable tree species. It's also, it grows incredibly fast, and it's almost like a weed species. But the lower graph shows the response of tulip poplar, Liriodendron tulipifera. Calcium and magnesium concentrations decreased, and the manganese concentration increased. But there was no fertilizer growth response in the tulip poplar. So we've got changes in the bolewood nutrient ratios in response to the fertilization treatment, but no significant changes or no long-term changes in growth rate. So does that mean there's a limitation of calcium and or manganese? So I'm still left with the question of what would a nutrient co-limitation look like? We're going to be talking about this afternoon. Casey Salvino, Brad Pino, and Antonio Tochila are discussing some of these ideas about nutrient ratios in their talks. And we also will be, I mentioned that Scott Bailey had talked about some of these in his talk. So these are the talks for the rest of the afternoon. Ruth has done some excellent work looking at multiple nutrient limitations on larger scales, and so I think we're going to get an interesting cross-section of what it means or where we might be seeing nutrient co-limitation or limitation by multiple nutrients. And with that, I think I'm going to close and take any questions that you might have. Thank you. And I actually had a graph on here, a slide on here with Bob Powers' Garden of Eden study. I don't know if you're familiar with his study in the in California, using weed control and various nutrients. And what he found was the weed control changed the water availability, which changed the nutrient availability. And it was a very elegant study. Water is very likely a limiting nutrient in many forests. So I think, or it's not a nutrient, but I think it is limiting in many forests. But I opted not to include it for length of time, and because that confuses confuses things too. If you've got that really elegant, rigorous statistical design, single species kind of stuff, you can pick those limitations out, as Bob did in the Garden of Eden study, as some of the people have done in the long-term soil productivity study, where they found with weed control or with organic matter removal that what you're actually doing is controlling water, and that can affect how nutrients are made available or when they're made available. Okay.